Danil on the Kitchen talks about food. Danil on the Kitchen talks recipes. Danil on the Kitchen talks about lots of other things on community radio. Welcome to the Danil on the Kitchen. My name is Lana Noctico.
And I'm Donna Prisgintas.
We gather here once a week at the studios of KHOIA Community Radio in beautiful downtown Ames, Iowa. We talk about food, farming advice, recipes, and opinions. Thanks for being with us today. We get by with a little help from our friends.
Oh, yes. The Donna Lana Kitchen Show is sponsored in part by the Mucky Duck Pub, where pub means community. For information, go to themuckyduckpub.com or call the pub and just ask for Marcus.
Well, I think fall is officially here. The trees aren't really fancy yet.
What a funny fall we're having here.
But it's very fallish, very fallish. It's time to put the garden to bed. It's time to put food by. Today, we'll deal with the last-minute garden harvest.
We knew that frost was coming, and boom, there was no ands or buts about it.
We did have a frost, and boy, do we get creative when it looks like the garden is about to say goodbye.
Right, and you always push it till the last minute. It was so hard to pull it all out and, you know, cut it all up. And, everything was looking great. And you just knew, okay, well, it's now or never.
It's now or never. We're going to talk today about freezing peppers and making hot pepper relish and some other notes on what to do with some of that last minute stuff. First, I want to mention, I took a little trip last week.
Oh, Lana had a vacation.
Farmers don't take vacations much, but we thought, let's get away from the farm for a little bit. And I just didn't want to do anything fancy. I just wanted to go someplace and read a book and look at some big bodies of water. And so my husband and I went up to northeastern Iowa and southwestern Minnesota and kind of drove up along the Mississippi River.
And a pretty land it is up there,
isn't it? It is. We ended up staying around the Root River in Fillmore and Houston counties of southeastern Minnesota in a little town called Lanesboro. Teeny tiny towns up there along this river. Population.
Okay, so it's a river that like feeds into the Mississippi more or less?
Yeah. Little towns all along this river. Population 800. Population 750.
Yeah, and they're still standing, huh?
And they're still standing. They make their show. Well, it's a farming community too. But canoes and bicycles. Tourists come from all over to enjoy this wonderful valley and the river, the Root River that goes through it. However, I talked to somebody that provides canoes and bikes for these people. He said, this was the worst summer ever. They have had so much rain that the Root River, even now, I was surprised. It was just roaring. They wouldn't even let anybody on the river for weekends after weekends after weekends. It would rain and it would flood. It would rain.
It was wet.
Yep. So although we've hit it at a beautiful weekend, a beautiful time, we had a great time, I guess the canoeing was not really up to snuff.
I guess you got a bicycle.
They have bicycle paths up the Kazoo, so that was good. Also, a lot of good things to do in Lanesboro, small little town, a great little library and a little community hall, little stores on Main Street. I wish to mention I visited the Wall of Chocolate, a small little grocery store. A general store has a whole back wall full of bulk chocolates you can get. And what more?
Ooh.
I mean, it's not a bad thing to run across, and coffees too, but to run across on your vacation, the Wall of Chocolate. And of course, there's touristy things. This is Amish country, and so people are buying into that. None of the little things that said Amish on them looked very Amish to me, but there was a little store that said Amish pantry or something. It went in. It was just chock-a-block with touristy stuff. And I guess not to be outdone by the Wall of Chocolate, they had a wall of insulting socks. Socks. And you'd read the side of the socks. They had political socks. They had be nasty to your mother-in-law socks. I'm too fat. I'm too skinny socks. None of those socks would I wear. But they had little funny sayings on all of these socks. Well, and there were some, you know, funny pictures too.
Gotta have a gimmick.
So there it was.
Funny socks.
So the wall of socks was there. Two. Yes, it was. Also, I want to mention, we went around the Mississippi a little bit. Beautiful, beautiful place to go around. And there was we went across a state park, Minnesota State Park, called Beaver Creek Valley State Park. And it was after season. Not many people were there. So we drove down in and started walking on the trails. Beautiful, beautiful. They have a creek in Beaver Creek Valley State Park. And it was spring-fed. It was full of watercress. It was full of watercress, folks. So, in northeastern Iowa, you can maybe find that, too.
Yeah, there's lots of creeks.
And, it just to see something like that, it was
And you
lovely.
went through Decorah, too, didn't you?
Yeah, we stopped in Decorah. Lots of good things to eat there. I stopped at Seed Savers Exchange, which is still open.
Oh, yeah.
Although, you know, the gardens are all frozen, and I had a great time poking around because everything was still labeled and you can kind of look underneath. And I found a new ground cherry variety up there. I'm going to try it.
Oh, goody, goody, goody.
They're doing all kinds of good things up there. Yes, they are.
Well, there are so many places for like weekend or weekday if you're retired, places to go around Iowa. That are really interesting, quite beautiful. Kelowna is one of my favorite places. Now, they have a real Amish store there with all kinds of interesting products and very usually quite practical and quite delicious.
Yeah. There's lots of apple orchards to visit this time of
year. Apple season,
Boone, Iowa, you can always go there and look at the trains. People just like to go
right,
look
there
at
is
the
that
train.
Wonderful train trip in Boone. Yeah. It lasts a few hours.
Yeah, yeah.
Which is always, especially if you got kids.
Oh, very good. Lots of good things to do. Yes, there is. But so we encourage people to take those short vacations. I must say it is a relaxing thing to do. Not, you know, we didn't have
right.
to
no
fly.
Airports. Yeah. Right. Right.
But just kind of
you don't have to
around.
Worry about baggage. You just throw your suitcase in the car. You even took your dog, didn't you?
The dog had a wonderful, because we did a lot of hiking. And my little corgi kept right up. He just kept going and going. We had a great time. There was an environmental learning center, a park called Eagle Bluff, north of Lanesboro, that this is bluff country, folks.
And it's eagle country, too,
eagle
because
country.
Of the rivers.
And that was lovely, too. Just big bluffs and rivers and, that was a fun thing to go. Lots of good things to do. So vacation locally. Find good stuff. And you could even find the wall of insulting socks if you'd like. Okay. There's things coming out of the garden. What have you been doing to kind of save the last of the summer?
Okay. Of course, the first thing, the most important thing that I was worried about was getting in my precious lemon verbena and rose geranium plants. Don't want to lose those. They're not easy to find. There's a kind of rose geranium that Lana and I love called the skeleton rose geranium that we just keep going and propagating. Of course, Lana's the propagator, but even I have propagated a few. So we got those all in and got them. I gave a bucket of them to Lana to deal with. But
they're dealt with. They're
and
dealt
then
with.
Then the lemon verbena, which is also not easy to find. You bring it in and you cut all of the, it just smells heavenly, but it has these large kind of long ferny shaped leaves that droop. And so you trim it back rather severely.
It's woody at the base.
Yeah, it's very woody. And even when I lived in California and I had them out all year round, this time of year, you always trim them back pretty severely. And then they start new little green leaves. And of course, I am drawing the leaves that I took off.
What do you use lemon verbena for?
Well, my favorite is I have a friend, Susan Herman Loomis, who has a cooking school in Normandy in France, and she has several cookbooks and a book about moving to France called En Rue Tatin, where she and her husband buy an old abbey and convert it for their family, and she puts her cooking school in it. Why am I talking? Oh, because Susan Herman Loomis's book, something, one of them called Cooking in France or something like that, because she's a really good cookbook writer. She has a recipe for lemon verbena madeleines.
Madeleines.
So I love to make that recipe. And, of course, if you don't, I mean, you can flavor them with lemon or other things, but she actually wrote it with lemon verbena, and she's correct. It is wonderful. But if you do not grow your own lemon verbena, you cannot buy it for love nor money.
That's true. I've even tried that recipe, and it works. They're little delicate, soft, in a mold.
Yeah, little shell-shaped.
Shell-shaped mold, and it's very lemon. They're just the thing with tea.
Yep, they're really wonderful. Oh. So that's one thing I do with lemon verbena. I have a lot this year, so I was thinking maybe of making a syrup with it also.
Ah.
But mostly I just dry it and, you know, take the long leaves, and I've just got them all laid out on the dining room table. And then when they get really dry, you gently strip them off their spines and put them in an airtight jar, and there you have it.
Yes. I take lemon verbena and dry it. I gather all kinds of different herbs and make a tea
oh,
mix.
Oh, you put that in your tea mix.
Herb
oh,
tea
it's
mix.
Excellent for
because
that.
Because there are other lemony things. There's lemon balm and there's lemon basil. But by the time those dry down, meh.
No, lemon verbena has a very good culinary flavor, even dried.
It stays.
It really works.
Yeah, that's good.
The other thing we took in, of course, was, my neighbor Ingrid picked all of her herbs. So she gave me a bundle of tarragon, you know, which is just like, oh, what a luxurious thing. So I've put it in a white balsamic vinegar, and we will have tarragon vinegar for the winter. She also picked me a lot of sage. Sage will go on for a little while, but I just made brown butter sage, which it won't last forever, but, you know, it will sit in the fridge for, it's butter, you know, so a month, no problem. But you just, we had a lot of sage. It was really nice. So you just pick the leaves off and you put them in a heavy bottom pan with a lot of butter, and you practically burn it. So the sage leaves turn almost black, just almost, and the butter is quite brown. And then you just scrape it all up into a little container and put it in the fridge. You can pull it out and... Oh, I think Ingrid was going to take a pasta and put the brown butter sage on. Brown butter sage is also really good in anything tomato-y, just a can of diced tomatoes and the brown butter sage on the pasta.
Huh.
So simple.
Huh.
And in squash soup. Oh, my goodness. Really, really good.
A fall thing.
Yes. So that's some of the things I've been doing.
Good. Speaking of sage is one of the things that, yes, it can last outside, sort of. I have never had luck with it doing well overwintering. Maybe I'm not dealing with the right variety. So
you have to start it up again.
I dig it up, put it in a big pot, and move it inside.
Well, what else did you bring in alive?
Alive. I am fortunate enough to have a greenhouse that is in the basement of my house against a south wall, and the greenhouse is open. It's just dirt to the – it is open dirt. So it's
And it's a totally appropriate thing for you to have.
Yes, I mean, right.
Such a whiz-bang gardener.
A place to play in the dirt in the wintertime.
Yeah.
It's not very big. I mean, it's kind of long and skinny, but that's where I move
it's
things.
It's bigger than a normal closet.
It's bigger than a normal closet.
It's a luxury.
And it's got south windows, and I have water down there. Okay, so sage is one of the plants I moved in. It's doing fine, thank you.
So do you throw them in the ground, or you keep it all in pots?
That I'll put in the ground because – roots, it likes to have good roots, okay? I'll do that also with parsley, with chives, mints, lovage I'm going to move down there.
Oh.
Thank you. And sorrel. I moved sorrel plant down there.
Oh.
Now, see, I move them in, and you'll see. it's like, okay, I've moved you. There it is. Go for it. Now, they'll kind of not do too much from now until Christmas. But long about January and long about when the sun starts coming back, different things will start to pop up. Also, between all of those more hardy plants, the things I've moved as plants into the garden, I plant. I plant lettuce and arugula and kale.
Oh, so you're starting stuff now,
yeah,
from seeds.
And actually, I just put seeds down there. Again, it's okay, seeds, I put you in the ground, go for it. Oh, kale. Kale I also planted in there. So we'll see. It's always a good experiment to see what grows in the basement.
And then in the spring, you have to move them all back out again.
Yeah, or, well, in the spring, I've been eating on that stuff all winter. So sometimes I just dig it all under, except I will probably either take clippings or move the whole plant of the sage and that sort of stuff.
We will put the lemon verbena and the rose geraniums back outside.
Right. Now, lemon verbena I keep in a large pot. I baby that thing.
Yeah.
So, yeah. And the rose geraniums, it gets cool in that greenhouse. So there you go.
Yeah. Well, my motto for my plants that I bring in is just, I don't really expect them to grow. It's just kind of like, oh, dear, just please don't die. Just make it through. And I put them in a south window, and I water everybody and hope for the best.
Yes, you do.
And then I take them back out in the summer where they get all happy again.
Yep. We can hope for the best, and we give it our best try. I have houseplants I put out on my deck in the summertime, and I just know they do not like freezing weather, so I've got a rather good-looking little coffee tree. It actually puts little coffee berries out, and that's moving in. That's a nice house plant. Also, I've got some basil that is the globe, small-leafed Italian bush basil. It's not the rangy, big-leaf stuff. That will last for a while. I moved it in, and it's a house plant.
Oh, that's true.
Okay.
I mean, my basil, the night before the frost, and I always do this, I just go out and clip everything and then lay it out to dry.
Yeah, yeah. I've already done that with bigger basil or made pesto.
Well, because the basil that you grow and dry, it's not like fresh basil, but it's way better than the dried basil that you buy in the store. It's much more. Now, we've talked about this before. So when you're drying the herbs, the idea is to get them spread out enough that they get air in them. And, like, I don't use a dehydrator. I either spread them out on flat surfaces or I hang them in bunches in the window. And then when they're ready to fall off, you gently pull them off the twigs because you don't want the twigs in everything. But you want to leave them as uncrushed as possible. And then you put them in a jar that's airtight. And then you crush them as you're using them, because when you crush them, that releases more of the volatile oils. So if you're drying your own herbs, try not to crush the leaves as much as possible.
As much as possible. Yeah, that volatile oil stuff, that's the important part. That's why
that's the smell and the flavor.
That's why the stuff from your garden is really good. And really, by next spring or next summer, throw those away because they don't last forever.
No.
But boy, are they good in the wintertime.
Right.
Another plant that I baby, and it's not winter hardy, although it grows like gangbusters in my garden in the summer, is pineapple sage.
Oh, yes.
It's a sage. It is very pineapple. It is sweet, sweet smelling. It puts up a beautiful red flower.
And do you know that red flower is quite edible and delicious in salads?
Yeah.
It's hard to get. When I lived in California, I had them, and they were plentiful enough that you could actually pick them and decorate your salads with them.
But California.
Yeah, they are beautiful. They are a beautiful garden plant, too.
Now, yeah, that's...
They get tall and
that's one... Also, I dry that, and that also goes into herb tea.
Yeah, because it's not a strong, sagey flavor.
No,
yeah.
It's not, but it's got a nice base to it. I like it. And that, I treat it as a house plant, and it does quite well in the house.
Hmm.
And it actually, for those of you who are really good at snipping off pieces of the plant for slips, it roots itself pretty easily.
Hmm.
So pineapple sage is also on my windowsill this time of year. Oh, good.
Now, the other thing I'm drawing, and this is my favorite, is lovage. Another dried herb that you cannot buy, right? So the lovage in the garden is perennial. In fact, it is always the first one up in the spring because it can take cold weather, and it is still going fine now. But I did get a bunch of clippings, and my lovage plant is currently getting a tree growing over it, and it is not very happy. So I had, wisely enough, shared. You started it. You do sell lovage plants in the spring. So I had given one to Gio and Paula, and they have lots of lovage. So I got back some lovage to dry, and that will get me through the winter. Now, lovage, as we were talking about this before the show, has a very nice celery-like flavor.
It's of that family. Yes, yes it is.
And it's really, really good in, like, beef stews. It's great with tomatoes. There's just, like, Thanksgiving dishes. I love to load up the lovage in various flavors like that.
It's a wintery taste. Yeah. Like sage.
It's really yummy.
Yeah, it's good. Yeah. Oh, one thing I ran across as I was poking around the Seed Savers Exchange gardens, the test plots out there. And I've seen these in catalogs, but hadn't had the courage to grow it. There is a whole bunch of different varieties of things they call cutting celery, which is the same family of lovage and celery, but it's grown for the tops. And I tasted all of those, and they weren't quite lovage, but they were intensely celery. And there was some of them actually make a ball.
Oh, that what turns into a celery root?
Perhaps, yes. But this was marked cutting celery.
I'm not sure that may be. I would have to look that up.
We'll have to look that up.
I think that might be what a celery root is called. I could be wrong about this. We'll look it up. Back to you with this one. But yeah, right. Because one year, over at what's the Quaker school? That's
Scattergood.
Scattergood in their garden. We were doing a little tour with the children, and there was this celery. And Mark, who's the gardener there, was like, I don't know what's with the celery. And I looked at it, and I said, dig me one up. And he dug it up, and it was celery root.
Yes, yes. Well, celery is a amazing plant. The kind of stuff that we see in the grocery store, that pale green stuff, that has to be babied. You have to blanch. You have to.
Right, we don't grow a lot of celery in Iowa.
It's really, but we can grow celery root here quite well. Oh, good.
So do you think you might? It's also called, well, maybe that's the French name, celeriac.
Now look that up.
Does that mean you might grow some next year?
I'll give it a try because if I see the plant, you know, that's what it's supposed to look. That was why it was a really nice to visit Seed Savers Exchange.
Oh, Lana got some inspiration. Yes.
I got some inspiration, okay. But I don't have to do anything now because I'm going into my long winter sleep for now.
Yeah.
But soon.
You let those inspirations just gestate there.
Yeah. And then the seed catalogs will start coming about New Year's, and here we go again. But right now, we're putting the garden to bed. All these little things that we can gather from the garden. Ah, very good. Oh, also it's time, for me anyway, to be organizing and storing onions and garlic and thinking of planting garlic too. Garlic and onions, dark and dry.
Don't put them in the refrigerator. When do you put the garlic back in?
Long about Halloween.
Oh, that's coming right up.
It's coming up, so we kind of have to look for some good weather. We've got some ground staked out, and it has been plowed, but we have to make beds yet, and it's a little wet. So, again, here we are, being a farmer, looking at the weather. Oh, fall. Lots of things to do to put the garden to bed, to put food by, and dealing with that garden harvest. Oh, my goodness.
Lots of produce right now.
Yeah. Should we have such problems? Yes, very good. This is KHOI. This is Tasty Radio for the Heart of Iowa. Welcome back. This is the Donna Lana Kitchen. As we mentioned before, we've had a frost here in central Iowa. It's time to get creative in the garden. Donna, let's talk about peppers. I brought in some
quite a few.
Show and tell.
Pretty peppers. I love peppers.
Yes, I do too. It was okay. Yeah. I just brought in kind of the last of the picking. These are all hot peppers, and I just want to mention some of the hot peppers that I like to deal with, because we're going to be talking about hot pepper relish in a little bit, and these are the varieties that I like to put in my hot pepper relish. My first one that I really like is called, and it is from Seed Savers Exchange, Ocelio Thin-Skinned Italian. It is actually, looks kind of like a bell pepper, a sort of wrinkly, a sort of pulled in on itself.
And this
red
is
pepper.
Hot?
It is hot. It is not. It is not a killer hot. Notice in the seed catalog, it says medium hot. And it's my kind of hot because
oh,
I
it's
can
really pretty.
You learn how to, oh, I can use a lot of it, or maybe just a little bit. It's medium hot.
And yeah, you wouldn't think of this as a hot pepper because it looks
bell pepper-ish. A little,
yeah, it's not as fat as a bell, mm-hmm, but it's really red and pretty. Now, or like a lipstick pepper or something.
Yeah. Something about that pepper. Years ago, and I'd grown those, I had a pepper that looked very, very much like this called Lou DeMarco pepper that I got from a friend in Des Moines.
Oh.
And actually, for a few years, maybe 5-10 years ago now, Seed Savers Exchange, who also takes peppers, seeds from all over and distributes them, they also had Lou DeMarco for a few years. But lo and behold, that seed source dried up, and they replaced it with this one called Ocelio. And if you read the I read stuff online about this pepper, and that also, guess what? That also came from a seed house in Des Moines. Huh? How about that? Anyway, that's a...
So it's well acclimated for Iowa.
It's a
beauty. It's
a great pepper. And this is actually kind of a small one. I brought in kind of the last one. So I have this Ocelio pepper that I like to put in my hot pepper jelly.
Your hot pepper jelly is quite red, isn't
yeah,
it?
Yeah. So I don't use many of these, and a lot of this stuff does turn red. And this will turn red, too. This is an Anaheim. But these are still yellow. This is a Hungarian hot wax.
And all of these are jalapenos. Sort of medium hot?
Medium hot. And this is one that I really like called Czech Black, which actually does ripen to red, but they stay small and black for a long time.
Well, they sure look like they can be hot.
They are a bit hotter. So when I want something to really kind of spice up my life, I like Check.
Now, there are some tricks.
Yeah.
Usually in a hot pepper, the most heat is in the seeds. So if you want it to be milder, you get the seeds out of it before you use it.
Yes,
like
you
even
do.
With a jalapeno or something, for example. And there's several. If you're doing a lot of them, probably wear gloves.
Yes, do wear gloves.
Your hands will burn afterwards. And don't touch your eyes, okay? I speak from experience, okay?
Yes, we do.
Sometimes, like if I'm just seeding a jalapeno, I'll just do it under running water.
I never heard of that, and that's a good idea to do it under running water.
Yeah, especially if you're just making some quick guacamole or salsa and you only want one, I just do it under running water and scrape, like cut it in half, scrape with a spoon. And don't really minimally touch the seeds because you will still have some heat, but you won't have nearly as much.
Ha!
And that's true of almost all peppers. Now, if you really want the heat, you can eat the seeds.
There you go. Yeah. And there are some of those among us who do. So more to you. So here's a bit of audio here from the Donna Lana Kitchen Archives from February 2017. In this audio, I talk about hot pepper relish and that, get this, remember this, the trick to this recipe is freezing the peppers in the freezer beforehand, before you put them in the food processor. We talk about that. And also in this audio, Donna gives us some good advice about freezing peppers or just about anything else. This is the Donna Lana Kitchen. We're going to be talking hot pepper jelly today. The ratio.
Are you still using a base of red peppers?
Yes. Yeah,
because it is red.
Yes. Yeah. Red,
very
red.
Very pretty.
I use a base of red peppers, which
Like bell peppers.
Bell peppers, anything red and very ripe. People think that people talk about green peppers. Oh, I want green peppers on. Why would you want a green pepper? They're not ready yet. Peppers taste their best, I think, when they are ripe. Peppers.
I totally agree.
Well, that's it here around the kitchen table. I brought a show and tell item, or maybe it's a taste and smell
item. Yeah, which is hard to do on radio, but we're going to give it a try here.
We do this occasionally. I have a recipe I'd like to share, and it's called hot pepper relish. And you,
right?
Yes. I was diving around in my freezer this time of year, finding those interesting little things that you save, and label, of course. And I remember that I had frozen peppers. Now, I had frozen sweet peppers, and I had frozen hot peppers. And it just happens to fit this recipe just fine. This is a sweet and savory recipe. And I got this recipe from my sister-in-law.
Oh, right. This is a classic hors d'oeuvre, Midwestern hors d'oeuvre, I believe.
It is.
Is that true?
Now in her family, hot peppers were not included. This started out as a sweet pepper relish.
Right. And because it's an hors d'oeuvre, because the color of red of the peppers is very, very attractive.
It's very lovely. And it's traditionally served with cream cheese and crackers.
A saltine cracker. Oh, yum, yum, yum.
On a saltine cracker.
I'm having it.
Mm-mm-mm. That's where the recipe came from ages ago. I had this recipe called red pepper sauce. Now, of course, I can never leave anything as is. I always have to dink around with things. And I love growing peppers. So I just happen to have peppers. And over the years, I've added more hot peppers to the mix. You can do that. And I've also added lime juice to it because I think that helps keep it a little
more than lime
light.
Juice. Didn't you just put the whole lime in?
I did. I doubled the recipe when I made this recipe. And I figured, well, here's this lime. I'll just throw it in.
Right. Because the first bite I got had a beautiful, tiny little chunk of the actual lime skin. And I thought that was perfect.
Well, yeah, that's good. That's good. This is a good recipe to make this time of year, I said, because it calls for frozen sliced and seeded sweet peppers and as many of your favorite hot peppers as you like. Freezing the peppers before you grind them in the food processor gives this recipe a chunky relish feel on the tongue. I've also process the peppers without freezing, just throw them and put them in the food processor and mush them around. But the relish is just a little bit runnier. It's more like a puree. It tastes
you
just
mean using
as good.
Fresh.
You can make fresh peppers. It's fine and dandy. But the difference between this and having it more like a puree, I like it to be a little chunkier anyway. There's even a few seeds in there, too.
That's really good.
And good. So that's it. It's not a jelly. It is a relish.
All right. You tell us how to do it, and then I'm going to tell you where the controversy lies in this recipe.
Oh, good. I love it. So, recipe for hot pepper relish. 6 cups total ground sweet and hot peppers. Now, this recipe, the way I like it, and it's you have to know your peppers. I use 5 cups of sweet peppers and 1 cup of hot peppers. Then,
I have a question, Lana.
Yeah.
If you're taking them frozen, how are you going to get cup measurements?
I measure them after I grind them. Very good, huh?
Okay, that's backwards, but okay.
I know it's backwards.
All right.
But
she's obviously eyeballing it, folks. She found some peppers in bags, freezer.
Some. That's how I cook.
Some.
I'm sorry.
Okay.
I promise to have Donna look over this recipe before we post it on the website, because I always do things with some. So here's my version. So 6 cups total ground sweet and hot peppers. Now, it's best to grind them frozen.
Grind in the food processor?
Yeah, food processor. Cuisinart.
So you just put them in.
Yep.
Oh, you run them through the feeding tube?
Yeah.
So are you using a shredding blade?
Yes.
Ha! See? Okay. In my mind, I was already just dumping them right in and using the regular round circulating blade. No.
Okay. Here we go.
Okay.
Here we go. All right. See, it's always good to have a cook here because I kind of make
cooks,
things.
Don't worry.
I cook from the hip. You got to be careful here. So to those 6 cups total of hot and sweet peppers.
Fed through the feeding tube into the
Then you end up with a frozen, kind of like a slushy. Then I dump that into my pan.
Wait, where did you put the lime?
I'm not there yet.
Oh.
Then I put 3 cups of sugar into the pan.
Okay.
And then I grind up one small lime for this whole thing.
All right, that goes through the shredder blade as well. Okay.
I guess you can put that with it.
Seeds and all.
Seeds and all. Why not? Why not?
She's loose here.
I am. And then 1 1/2 cups dark apple cider vinegar. In a heavy bottom pan, cook until thick. And it takes about 2 hours. You bring it to a boil.
That's quite a bit of vinegar and sugar. Yeah, okay.
You bring it to a boil and then simmer about 2 hours. Simmer. Don't let it boil hard. You don't want it to turn dark. You stir often. You put it into small jars.
Right, because this is a beautiful color.
Yep. You don't want to cook it too long. You can kind of burn. It tastes okay, but it looks kind of dark, and it's nice to have it bright red. I think the lime helps that. Now, you can put it in small jars, keep it in the refrigerator, or put in a small jar hot, and if you put a canning lid on it.
You
can hot pack it. It works fine. Then serve it with cream cheese and crackers. It is great at a potluck.
I think it also would be really good, use a chutney on a fish or a chicken dish.
Oh, it'd
or
be great
pork.
On fish. It'd be it, great
yeah,
on fish.
There are
fish.
A lot of uses for this. Now, Lana left out her major secret.
What?
The Maslin pan.
Oh, I have. I love making jelly.
This becomes easy when you have the right pan. Otherwise, the danger of you need a thick-bottomed pan.
Yes, this is one of those long cooking things. Get a thick-bottomed kettle pan to cook this
in. Do you think you could do it in a crock pot?
Oh, I bet you could overnight. You want to evaporate a little bit of the liquid.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, that's good. And if it's a little runny, that's fine. So I have something called a Maslin pan. I got it on the internet. Maslin. It is a very heavy-bottomed pan made for making jelly. It has a little spout on one side. And
they're
really
beautiful.
Nice. Oh, they're great.
Yours is stainless steel,
Stainless
right?
steel.
They do come in copper.
They come in copper. I did not spring for the copper Maslin pan.
No, they're also, then you have to clean them.
Yeah. So this is a good use for my jelly-making pan. It has a heavy bottom. I love it. Now,
okay, so here's the controversy. So Lana, all right, I'm going to read you a little bit from On Food and Cooking, The Science and Lore of the Kitchen by Harold McGee. Now, Harold McGee is sort of, this is like the Bible of the science behind most cooking things. So Harold is, he's the expert you go to. I mean, this is a reference book that I really, sometimes I read it. So he's saying this is about, because we're in the season now where we're all kind of cleaning out our freezers, using the last bits of what was last year's harvest, making room for the new harvest to come. And it's, of course, you get in there in the freezer and you think, oh, why did I put this in? What is this? What? Lana's probably more label conscious than I am. But when a lot of things come up, and you have lots of them and you're kind of working fast and furiously to – one of my favorite things is, of course, I dealing with berries and currants and things like that. And I will – instead of making jams and jellies on the spot, I will often just cook them down, put them through the food mill and make them into pouches of bags of puree and stuff like this. So what Lana has done – well, first I'll tell you what Harold McGee says about – freezing vegetables. He says here's what happens. The damage and physical disruption is caused by the water crystals. This is the water that's actually in the fruit, he says. So these water crystals, they freeze and the edges puncture the cell walls and membranes. When the food is thawed, the cell fluids leak out of the cells and the food loses crispness and becomes limp and wet. Yes, we all know what that is. Producers of frozen foods minimize the size of the ice crystals, and so it limits the amount of damage. That's why, if you buy frozen green beans in the store, they're not as bad as the ones that you've frozen at home in terms of color and limpness.
because they freeze the foods as quickly as possible at a low temperature, which is often minus 40 degrees Fahrenheit. Under these conditions, many small ice crystals form. At higher temperatures, fewer and larger crystals form and do more damage. Home and restaurant freezers are warmer than commercial freezers, and their temperatures fluctuate. So during the storage, some water melts and refreezes into larger crystals, and the food's textures suffer. He recommends, he goes on to say, another problem with freezing fruits and vegetables is that even though it's frozen, some enzymatic functions still continue. So he says to freeze your peppers, for example, mm-hmm. you are supposed to blanch them and freeze them. Ah. Now, Lana does not do that.
I don't. And just for this recipe, it works out really well.
All peppers?
It depends. Sometimes I do, sometimes I don't. But I always put up a lot of the peppers this way because it is so easy. Remember when your late summer garden was producing too many peppers? Well, I cut my peppers in quarters, take out the seeds and the stems, and layer them on cookie sheets and put the cookie sheets in the freezer. And I had this theory.
So that's sort of IQF.
Freezes them fast.
Individual quality frozen. Okay. So
oh,
you
IQF.
IQF. Yeah. That's the industry term for it. Like, and they mostly use it with berries. So like when you buy mm-hmm. a bag of frozen berries for your smoothies, they're not all a clump of berries. They are individually quick frozen. So that, you're doing that to your peppers.
That seems to work really well. It's simple. And I don't blanch them. I just freeze them. And then the next day, or whenever I remember, I open the freezer and put them into freezer bags and then put them back
okay,
in.
Okay.
And label those freezer bags. Like I said, I have hot peppers and I have sweet peppers. And not only I use them not only for this relish, but there's also stews and crock pots and pasta sauces and pizza.
Well,
and
where you're going to cook them. Well, you know, okay, Harold, I'm sorry, but on this one I'm going with Lana because the color, if you're blanching, you're going to lose some of your color. And just looking at the color of Lana's pepper jelly, I must say I'm going to freeze them whole next year.
Yeah,
just
for
like
this,
that.
Yeah.
Or no, they're cut. They're still cut, yeah. And you've taken the seeds out. So they're really ready to cook with, and they're really easy.
Right. You don't want to freeze them whole because then you have this kind of cavity in the middle that won't get frozen as well.
Well, and the other thing is once you take them out, if you haven't de-seeded them and you're de-seeding a flaccid frozen pepper, it's really annoying. It's much, much easier to just chop them in half or quarters and then rip the little seed bit out with your hands and boom, in it goes.
Right.
Boomsy boom.
So look for the hot pepper relish recipe, which will be on the Donna Lana Kitchen website. You can go to khoifm.org. You can find out a lot of shows there, but you can find the Donna Lana Kitchen show, and there will be this recipe added to the recipe page as soon as Donna sort of tweaks the way I cook. Like I say, I cook from the hip. So Donna may even add like quantities and things. This
oh, no, no, no. I'm not given to that. That would be beyond my patience level.
Welcome back. This is the Donna Lana Kitchen. That was some advice from Donna about freezing things, and I gave a nice recipe for hot pepper relish It's a big hit around the holidays.
Yeah, and it makes good Christmas presents.
Good Christmas presents. There you go. You're listening to KHOY. This is the Donalana Kitchen. This is the Donalana Kitchen. That was a tune from songwriter and fine musician Norman Blake. That tune was called Salty. Yes, all these salty sort of things around here. I want to mention a few news items that I ran across. First off, happy birthday to Sesame Street. Sesame Street is 50 years old. One of the better things that happened on television, I think, and I wish them many more years, too. And here's a local news item. Nevada, Iowa has a new Main Street director. They haven't had one of those. You know, you kind of gather around and see what's important about your town and make things better. And they couldn't have picked somebody better. Henry Corbin, 22 years old, is looking forward to helping out the town that he loves since his childhood. He worked previously here in Ames for the Practical Farmers of Iowa, and we got to know him as a volunteer here at KHOI a couple of years ago. Henry Corbin will bring good things, I think.
Yes,
too.
A lovely young man.
And they're yes. just glad, they're just thrilled.
Congratulations,
to have him.
Henry, on your first job out of college.
Well, no, he worked for PFI for a while.
Right, but he was still was an ISU student.
And good for him.
Yep.
Good for he really loves history, and already he's mm-hmm. doing things for the Nevada area community, so many things happening to the east of us.
One of our hometown young men.
Yes, it is. Yes, it is. Also, let's see. Oh, I want to also commend the Ames City Council for doing nothing.
This is a great story.
Perfect.
This was made international news, Lana. Did you know
international
daughter in New Zealand called me and she'd heard the news?
You're kidding.
No.
Well, tell them what it was. We had something we thought was a good idea that we did here in Ames. A bunch of people got together and painted the crosswalk by the four directions on an intersection by
right here by between us and the library.
Yeah.
Right here. It's 5th and Douglas.
Yeah, right. And so a bunch of people painted the crosswalks in, get this, inclusive color. So instead of just your white stripes or your white blocks of color, it's full of color now. What a nice thing to do.
And it's really pretty.
It is. It reminds us that we can be joyful and with one another here. They're pink.
And
they
got it done in time for the Ames' Gay Pride Day.
It worked out really well. And, yes, it is still there because a couple days later, they heard from the Federal Highway Commission that, you can't do that. You can't. It was highly condemned.
It will distract people while they're driving.
Oh, well, we can't have that. So we heard from on high, the people from the Federal Highway Commission raised a fuss about that. And the Ames City Council looked at one another and they decided to do nothing. So it's still there. Three cheers for people that can live with a little color in their lives. Very
and
good.
And a little controversy also.
so that's a good news item.
So us locals, we went up against the feds and here we are.
Yeah.
We fought them and we're still winning.
Fought the law and the law did not win this time.
Yeah.
There we go. All right. I want to mention that to find that hot pepper recipe, go to khoifm.org. Go to the Donna Lana Kitchen page, find archives, find recipes. The hot pepper relish is there. You have been listening to the Donna Lana Kitchen. We come to you Tuesday at noon. Repeat it at 7 p.m. or any time because you can download us. This is Community Radio. Today we talked about dealing with the harvest and all those little things that you can do to keep a little bit of that garden with you all year long.
And we want to remind you all that it's squash, apple, and chestnut season.
Enjoy. Support this fine radio station. My name is Lana Noctigal.
And I'm Donna Prishkintas.
And we've had excellent engineering by Cynthia McClure. Eat good food and enjoy life.